listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Parent Choices for Struggling Teens with Lon Woodbury, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Parent Choices for Struggling Teens. I'm your host, Lon Woodbury, located in North Idaho, where currently we're snowed in. A big dump of snow last night. Raising a child is a difficult job at best, but parents who have children with emotional, behavioral, and are learning problems find they need help, and often professional help. Here's where we talk with professionals who are devoting their lives to help those children and their families. The topic today is sugar and teens. And this edition of Parent Choices for Struggling Teens is sponsored by Spring Ridge Academy, a therapeutic boarding school for girls in Arizona. My guest today is Tiffany Wright. Tiffany has a PhD in psychology, and she's known as the LA Skinny Coach. And she's also an internationally health advocate and a weight loss expert. She's founded the Sugar-Free Initiative that studies and works with sugar addiction. So, Tiffany, good afternoon. Welcome. Hi. Glad to see you here. This is going to be an interesting discussion. Well, let's start with something that's in the news quite a bit, the obesity epidemic, particularly among teens. Could you explain a little bit about what you see is going on and maybe speculate on some of the causes?
Okay, sure. Well, we all have heard now that it's up to 60% of people in America are obese, not just overweight, but obese. Childhood obesity has more than tripled in the last 30 years, with two-thirds of kids either obese or overweight. And unfortunately, in terms of numbers, if a child is overweight, if a human being is overweight as a child, they're 70% more likely to be overweight as an adult. So,
and with all the health problems that come along with that, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. They found that obese children are 3 to 5 times more likely than normal weight children to suffer a heart attack or stroke before the age of 65. When they look at their arteries, they have the arteries of middle-aged smokers. So being overweight is just as, if not more damaging to a child's body than an adult's body.
Okay.
And it affects them for life. It never goes away. Even if they lose the weight, their bodies have still been compromised.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think is causing this? I know there's a lot of debate and people are pointing fingers a bunch of ways. So what do you think are some of the causes for this?
Well, frankly, I believe the primary cause is the food industry, although that's I ultimately put the responsibility on the parents and on people for their own dietary choices. The food industry has made a significant impact since the 1980s, really. The obesity rate was less than 10% then. And things that have been produced since then are things like genetically modified foods in mass and high fructose corn syrup in mass. And so the correlation is just too striking to pretend like we're just eating more or we're busy. You know,
okay.
To go from 10% in 1980.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of sugar consumption, in the 1800s, the average person ate about 4 pounds of sugar per year. Now, over half of Americans eat 180 pounds per year. That's a half a pound a day.
Wow. You mentioned something earlier, and I've heard this debate, and I haven't heard very much science on it. You mentioned genetically modified food. What's the problem with that?
Well, it's called genetic roulette. I'm not associated in any way, but that is a pretty good documentary on the effects. But the genetically modified food tends to not be processed in the body in a way that normal food is, because it's artificial and it's the way the gene of the food is made. It's not recognized by the body. So it causes things like leaky gut syndrome. Basically, it makes your gut permeable, which you don't want, which makes it harder to digest and properly utilize food. But that's just one of many things that, you know, have been associated to eating genetically modified food. They can even see it in the genes of children now. They can see it. Unrecognizable. Oh. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, well, let me follow through that in a little bit, because in a sense, and this is what some defenders have said, we've modified genetically food for some time through crossbreeding. The corn of today is not like the corn of a couple, 3 centuries ago, and the maize that was originally, it was much more healthy and stuff like that. So how is modern genetically modified foods, how do they get away from what would have been naturally produced and through cross fertilization, or however they do it?
How do they do it? What they do is I don't know the technical term, but it's like pollinate. They get into the gene of the food, and they put in, specifically what they're doing is they're putting in the weed killer, Roundup. They're putting it in there. So basically, anytime an insect eats that corn or that wheat, it explodes from the inside out. Its intestines, actually, which is not exactly what happens to us, obviously. We're not exploding, but it does affect the intestinal system.
Okay, so
what they're doing is they're introducing this strain that our bodies aren't able to tolerate, and we're mass producing it and feeding it to, you know, our children.
So some sort of a pesticide in a sense.
Yes.
Instead of naturally developed using nature, they somehow change the genes and they introduce elements in it. Okay, that's interesting. I've sort of wondered about that on the period of time. Well, let's talk some more about the obesity epidemic and some of the other causes. What do you think might be some of the causes other than the food? I can see the food and the processed food. Problem. Are there some other things that are contributing to it?
Well, I think, you know, activity has an effect. The average kid spends about 8 hours a day sitting in front of some kind of screen. That's a lot of hours in front of a screen. And that can be blamed on both parents having to work. It can be blamed on, our society being too fast-paced. It's certainly in L.A., you don't see many children walking. I'm in Venice Beach. You don't see many kids walking around. But, in fact...
No, not anymore.
When it comes to overweight, obesity, and, you know, not health, not in terms of like cardiovascular health, but if you're talking about diet, exercise has been shown to be less than 10% to do with your body weight. It's primarily diet. It's almost all diet. So should we be exercising more? Of course we should. It's good for your heart. It's good for your mood. The sunshine's good for your vitamin D. I'm not saying don't exercise. I'm far from it. Our kids are not getting out enough. No question.
But as far as obesity, it's overrated.
Well, as far as obesity, it's the diet. It's what we eat.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now one of the things, the two things you in the material you sent me, you seem to have your target on the food was sugar, and also flour. And I've heard about the sugar being a problem, but that makes sort of sense. But the flour. Could you talk a little bit about sugar and some more on the sugar? We're using a lot more of it now. It isn't good for you. And then talk about flour. But let's start with sugar.
Well, I was talking a little bit about the sugar slightly earlier. It's also in, you know, it's in so many things you don't know. Of course, it's in soft drinks. It's in fruit juices, sports drinks. It's in almost every processed food, from bologna to pretzels, Worcestershire sauce, cheese. It's even in, you know, the Morton, you know, that little blue salt shaker with the girl with the umbrella?
Mm-hmm.
There's
right.
sugar in that. There's sugar in that salt.
Why is it in there?
I don't know. It didn't used to be. Probably
because
people
maybe?
Will eat it.
Okay.
Yeah, no. There's sugar in most infant formula. In fact, most infant formula has the equivalent of a can of Coca-Cola. So babies are being metabolically poisoned from day one if they're eating formula. So it's in 70 to 80% of the products sold at the store. Some form of sugar. You wouldn't expect it. You have to look on the ingredients list. And, you know, there's 100, which if you go to skinnycoach.com, which is my website, I can send you, or you can find on there, the 100 names for sugar. Because there's a lot of different, you know, sources. And you don't know what it is when it has these technical names. But it's just plain old sugar. In terms of flour, flour operates similarly to sugar because the minute you eat it, it's processed into sugar. The way it works is when you eat food, you know, if it's a carbohydrate, like vegetables are carbohydrates, so are fruits, but those are good for you. But when you eat flour, the minute it touches your tongue, it turns to glucose, you know, and then it goes through the body, goes through your liver, turns into glycogen, goes through your pancreas, and then it produces insulin. So this increase in sugar and flours is what it's doing. It's disrupting the hormone levels of insulin, which is why we have such an obesity problem. In fact, the prediction is by 2050, 50% of kids will have type 2 diabetes. You know, and
you mentioned the flour changes the glucose. What's glucose and how is it harmful or bad?
Okay, yeah, glucose is just it's the sugar our body uses. So the whole problem with flour is, like, let's say people like to use, well, what about other types of flour, not white flour? Let's even use something really healthy like brown rice flour, let's say. And when you eat brown rice, it eventually turns to glucose too. All carbohydrates do. That's okay. But first you chew it, you're releasing digestive enzymes, you're releasing chemicals slowly in your brain. The whole process is happening at a normal, natural rate. It has fiber, you know, you're being prepared, your body's preparing. When you put that brown rice in a blender and you process it, it's processed, then the second it touches your tongue, it turns into sugar.
So it's the instant. Is it, the problem is the instant of the change, almost instantly, rather than more natural on the body can adjust to it?
Exactly. That's exactly right. And that's the entire problem with diabetes. It's type 2 diabetes. It's this imbalance, which, you know, this is one thing kids are at advantage, or they used to be, because it takes a long time for your pancreas to give up. That's why many women, you know, I'm working a lot with women who hit 40, and either they didn't have a weight problem before or their weight problem became significantly worse after 40. And that's because, just like everything else after 40, it stops working as well. Your hair starts to go gray. Your eyes start to go a little bit. Well, your ability to regulate insulin starts to deteriorate too. And so you start gaining fat, you know.
And so right. If you're eating something that takes that makes more work for the body to process or takes longer to process, it's not as efficient at it. And that causes a problem. Whereas if a straight flour, it'd immediately change and that causes problems. Okay. I'm trying to get a handle on this because I haven't heard much of this before.
Yeah. Well, I think it's coming out more and more now. Now that you're, you know, hearing a little, you'll see more and more, because in the 80s, everyone talked about low fat, and that's been, by the way, just to be clear, my program, Skinny Coach, is not a low carb diet. I don't advocate low carbs, you know, good, healthy carbs, lots of fruits, lots of vegetables, lots of whole grains, not flours, not wheat, things, you know, not genetically modified corns, but good grains. I'm for all of those things, real, natural, whole foods. But fat is not the issue. They've shown over and over. In fact, there's a much higher correlation between sugar ingestion and heart disease, high cholesterol, and diabetes than there is to fat or saturated fat intake.
Okay, and I understood what I've generally heard is that some fat is right, but if you get too much, then it's a problem. And is that even not quite right?
Well, yes, of course. Too much of anything's a problem, but it's better to have too much fat than too much sugar. How about if we had to narrow it down that way? You want to have the right amount of everything, but low fat's not the way to go, for sure.
What about some other popular foods contributing to the problem? You mentioned stevia and agave. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right.
Yeah.
Agave. What are some of the others? Those are what, artificial substances, sweeteners or something?
Well, yeah, agave's been being touted as a health food because it's natural, but it's actually worse for you than white table sugar. It is natural, it's true, and it has more vitamins and minerals in it, but it actually turns into fructose, which is the one type of sugar that goes through your liver in a certain way that actually damages it. And it's 85% fructose, where white table sugar is only 50. So agave nectar, people are you know, it's supposed to be a health food. It's actually not good for you. You shouldn't be giving your children agave instead of sugar if you're choosing one. Stevia, on the other hand, while my girls, my skinny girls is what I call them, the women I work with and the men that I work with that have weight problems, we don't eat any form of sugar, even stevia, even because we need to get, I work with people who are basically addicted to sugar. They are unable to control their intake. They're unable to moderate. They're unable to stay on diets. They cannot, they've gotten to a point where it can be categorized as an addiction. And it's been categorized in the Diagnostic Manual of Psychiatric Disorders as an addiction, not an eating disorder. And so with my people, we don't eat stevia because it just makes you always want the sweetness, the sugar, the taste. But for children who don't have this problem, stevia is actually a nice alternative. It's zero calories. It's not artificial. It comes from a plant. It's very good for you. It does not affect your blood sugars, so it doesn't have that pancreatic effect. So stevia is a very nice alternative to sugar. Other things
okay.
that aren't so... Go ahead.
Well, let's talk about addiction. You mentioned addiction there. And what's a working definition of addiction, and how do these become addictions? Because I've heard some reference to eating as an addiction, but not very much in detail. So could you explain that a little bit more?
Well, some of the things that, I can't name the exact definition off the top of my head, but withdrawal symptoms are one, an inability to stop when you've had enough, planning repeatedly to monitor your behavior and are unable. These are all signals of addiction.
Okay, so
how
let me intervene here. I had a thought. So the popular advertising thing a few years ago, a Big Mac attack, that would be dealing with withdrawal symptoms?
Yes, that's exactly right. That's a good one. I haven't heard that one. I'll have to remember that, if you don't mind.
Oh, please do ahead.
Exactly right. And on my skinnycoach.com, I have a sugar addiction quiz. And it doesn't take that long for me to be able to tell. I think there's maybe 10 questions. But I can, you know, pretty much ascertain from that if the person would qualify. And as with any addiction, and again, not advocating this for children, I work with children, I don't use the abstinent model with them, but with my adults who answer yes to those questions, we abstain. I haven't had sugar or flour in over 15 years. I lost 100 pounds 15 years ago. And when you're addicted to something, you know, abstinence is a very viable option. It's what Alcoholics Anonymous use, you know. If I could, you know, if my girls could moderate their sugar and flour intake, they would have done it by the time they get to me. If moderation was an option, it would have happened by the time someone's 45.
Describe a little bit about when somebody has a food addiction. What do you see? What behaviors or what hints could you have for somebody that they're looking in the self? Do I have a food addiction? What would they look for?
Well, first of all, we can go through the sugar addiction quiz at Skinny
Sure.
Coach. You know, are you obsessed with your weight? So someone who's has a food addiction is probably obsessing over their weight. So there's the mental component, but there's also an obsession based on facts. Their weight's become a problem. You know, if they've tried multiple weight loss programs and failed. Mm-hmm. You know, if you haven't tried, for instance, Weight Watchers, which it only has a 3% success rate, but you know, maybe you just need to learn good eating habits. So to qualify as an addiction, you must have tried to get it under control and failed. Sugar specifically, is it a struggle to stop eating desserts, sweets, breads, pastas? There are those people, you might be one of them, Lon, that you can have a bite or a piece and be done.
Like you just can't have one, right?
Just can't have one, right. I have a story that I tell and every person I work with can relate to it. I would get the ice cream, you know, and the evening would come and I would get a small bowl, a little cup sized bowl and take out one little scoop and go sit down in front of the TV and eat that one little scoop. And then within a couple minutes, I'd get up and I'd get one more little scoop, you know, and then, okay, no more, no more. And that process would go on for hours until the entire carton was gone. And this was not a one-time occurrence. It takes a lot of work to be 100 pounds overweight. You're eating a lot of stuff.
Oh yeah. Well, in my case, I used to have a sweet tooth, and I just love all that stuff. And desserts, had to have desserts and ice cream. I would get a quart of ice cream. My dad and I split it. And about middle age.
Oh, I'm so sorry. You're cutting up. I don't know if you can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you fine. Yeah, I can hear you fine. No, in my situation, I used to have a sweet tooth, and then by about middle age, I get to where now sometimes dessert is offered and I don't want it. It just doesn't sound good. So that's probably maybe some sort of an automatic self-preservation thing that I've come to subconsciously.
Right. Or yeah, you just feel better, or who knows, right? Or maybe you're eating healthier. By just as you grew older, you learned how to eat better, and by eating better, you're not triggering. So, you know, when you eat these foods, they're designed, when we began this conversation, we were talking about the food industry. Well, there's a man named David Kessler, who used to be the head of the Food and Drug Administration. He's a very bright man. He wrote a book called The End of Overeating, and he talks about what the food industry calls the golden triangle, not the golden arches, but the golden triangle. And it's the perfect blend, the perfect mixture of sugar, salt, and fat, so that the mice, when eating, cannot stop. They will eat past the amount that they're comfortable, because it's so palatable that you just have to have more. It's just so darn good.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and for me, that's one thing, to actually manipulate it that way. But to me, that's not an actual abuse of power. What is, to me, is what they're doing with other foods like high fructose corn syrup. First of all, the whole genetically modified we talked about, but they're actually regulating the manufacturing the food in a way that it disrupts hormones like leptin, which is the hormone that tells your body that you're full. It's the hormone that goes to your brain and says, okay, I've had enough food, I'm full. So it disrupts that, which to me, that borders on, you know, abuse, and it should be illegal, like cigarettes, when they started manipulating the body with chemicals that made you want more.
Uh-huh.
You know, disrupted, you know, they found that to be that's why they were able to sue the drug industry, because of that. And the food industry doing the same thing.
Okay. Yeah. Well, as we talk, keep thinking, I'm glad I live out in the country and we have a garden and try to eat from that as much as we can.
Yes. Yes,
but not everybody can do that. But the health food stores and Whole Foods, various types, have become more popular. Unfortunately, they seem to be more expensive. Okay, so we've talked about addiction, and this is some sort of it's an addiction. It has the patterns of an addiction, the craving, the withdrawal, and all of that. And so probably most of the people that are obese, and especially severely obese, would pass that test or fail it, however way you want to look at it, to show that they're addicted, right?
Yes, yeah, they'd say yes to more questions than not. I mean, I think I didn't get to one that I think is the most indicative, and that's when you're at a party, are you consumed with thoughts of the food instead of the people? And that question, when someone's really got it bad, that one really hits them, because they're used to, you know, you can't even enjoy yourself, because all you can think about is the buffet or the table or the appetizer instead of the people you're with, which is just so sad, and it's so true.
Okay. So we have addiction, are there some other foods? What about the more common, you know, potatoes and steak, you know, red meat? And what's your attitude on those, and how do they do? They've been somewhat controversial at times.
Right. So the reason, well, the steak is because of the saturated fat. And I kind of already said how I feel about fat. I don't think you should eat limited amounts. And, you know, on the Skinny Coach diet, you don't. It is controlled, the amounts you eat. But I don't have any problem against red meat. I always say eat grass-fed meat if you can. I know that's kind of out there, and I know I'm from Venice Beach and all that. But grass-fed beef, they're eating what they're supposed to be eating. It has omega-3s, and it's full of vitamins and minerals that the meat is not full of when it eats the genetically modified corn diet. So the meat is completely different if you're getting organic or grass-fed beef. And in terms of potatoes, the reason people are against potatoes is because of the no-carb craze. And so I am perfectly fine with potatoes as long as you're having it with a good solid protein. So the key, again, is slowing down that insulin release. So if the key, for me, for my plan, the key is slowing down that insulin release. And the way you slow that down is to eat whole foods and always have a little bit of protein at every meal.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to have a piece of fruit, for instance, even then you want to have a little protein with it.
Okay. Well, one of the things you were talking earlier, I'm living in North Idaho and my kids are in 4-H, and it's very common knowledge around here that the best beef and the best pig is, grain-fed. On the beef particularly, it's grain-fed. They're much better. They're much fatter. They seem to be much more healthy. They're much more tasty. Just exactly, I think, what you're recommending.
Grass-fed, not grain-fed, not corn-fed.
Yeah, grass-fed.
Grass-fed. Agreed. Yes.
Oftentimes it's corn-fed, but the main problem there is it's oftentimes genetically modified grain.
That's right, the corn,
So if it's natural, it wouldn't be so much of a problem.
That's right. That's true.
Okay. Well, we got to take a quick break. We're talking to Stephanie Wright. She's the Skinny Coach in Los Angeles. And we're talking about sugar and teens. And sugar, we've got in mind the whole thing of food and what's good and not bad. But stay tuned. We have a brief announcement from Spring Ridge Academy, a therapeutic boarding school for girls in Arizona. We'll be right back.
You know, we were in deep trouble. And we were, like I think many parents, after years of trying everything, a variety of things, it was just blowing apart.
The special thing at Spring Ridge Academy is that we're dealing with the whole person. We're dealing with their everyday action through therapy, and we're watching them perform in the classroom so that the whole person is being challenged constantly throughout the day.
They are here 24/7, focused on themselves and the work that they need to do, whether it's academic, therapeutic, peer relationships, family, whatever it is, there is no outside distraction. And I think that is of paramount importance.
What I want you to understand as a parent is that we are extremely successful, not just with the girls, but with families.
For more information about Spring Ridge Academy, call 928-632-4602 or check out our website at www.springridgeacademy.com.
Welcome back. This is Lon Woodbury, educational consultant, located in North Idaho, and this is Parent Choices for Struggling Teens. We're talking with Tiffany Wright. She has a PhD in psychology and is now known as the LA Skinny Coach. And we're talking now, the topic is sugar in your teens. So, Tiffany, we've been talking about a bunch of interesting things, and sounds like what you're doing, one way you could describe it, is help people that have an obesity problem, help them heal. And so you mentioned rewiring the brain. Does that call for some sort of, in a sense, you're rewiring the brain, and what are you doing, and what are you trying to do on that? Could you explain a little bit more about that?
Sure. My diet is a healthy diet, but just like any diet, if you're not able to follow it, it's useless. And the way that I work is I talk with, it's all phone work, so I'm the LA Skinny Coach, but I work with clients all over the world in other countries, through the States primarily, but I do my work via phone, and I actually help them quite a bit doing menu planning, especially with children. Lots of menu planning, ideas, grocery shopping, food lists, things that, because a lot of people can't cook. You can eat perfectly healthy and never cook a meal, turns out. You can eat perfectly healthy and eat out, too, as well, Or you can cook. Lots of recipe ideas, things like that, the details. But what we do is we plan menus ahead of time, so there's planning. So we know what we're eating tomorrow. We know what we're feeding our kids tomorrow. We know ahead of time. We're not ever standing in front of the refrigerator thinking what's for dinner. So we plan ahead of time. My clients email me their menu. I see them ahead of time. They commit to them ahead of time. They write out a self-hypnosis or mantra every night. They type it every night. I commit to you, my skinny coach, and to me, my skinny self, to eat the following foods tomorrow and not one other bite. And as long as I do, I'll be skinny forever. And skinny in my book means healthy, the right weight that you feel good at. So they write that every night. That's rewiring in their brain. You know, that's rethinking it. That's committing to it. Doing it does that. But primarily the work comes in our daily phone calls. I talk to my clients every day by phone. And it's not, you know, they're not two-hour conversations. Sometimes they're a minute long. Hey, it's me. I'm fine. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Other times, hey, this Christmas party's coming up. You know, I've been doing great. I feel good. But, man, I know my mom's going to make her, you know, famous pecan pie, and I just love that pie. And that's where I would come in, and I would say, well, you know, when you came to me, you were 20 pounds heavier than you are now. You were crying. Your doctor said you had to lose weight. You were sick. You know, now you're feeling in control. You lost 20 pounds. You know, you want to get, you like the way you feel. You do not feel out of control anymore. Now, you've had 45 years of pecan pie. Now it's time to be healthy. We're going to now do it this way. You cannot have both. If you could have pecan pie and be thin and healthy, you would have done it before now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's the reminding, the you know, hitting it home, giving them different examples, different ways to think about it. It's almost like mentoring, which you can probably relate to with your teamwork. Someone
sure.
else to show them what to do. If they knew how to think like a thin, healthy person, they would do it, for heaven's sakes. No one wants to do this to themselves. They need a model. They need language, a way to think about it. And so what happens is, over time, by not doing it because they're prepared, because they have a coach, because they have a mentor, because they have a different way to look at it, because of all the things we put into place at Skinny Coach, over time, they don't do it, and they're not doing it day after day after day. So the part of their brain that says, oh, screw it, it's just one piece of pecan pie, it's once a year, which really it's never just one, that part of the brain kind of starts to atrophy because they never reward it. And the part of the brain that says, no, I don't eat that, I eat healthy, I am in control, that part of the brain gets stronger, and it's rewarded day after day after day by by how good you feel.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, literally new neural connections are being strengthened and developed. And those old ones that just go for it, that, no, I mean, that part of your brain knows if you eat chocolate, you're going to feel really good. I mean, it's highly rewarding to eat these foods, but it starts to forget because it's not rewarded through abstinence. You know, I can smell pizza. Mm-hmm. My kids eat pizza. My kids eat sugar, by the way. They're not addicted to sugar. I am not, you know. I know it's. I'm not. You're not supposed to use the word Nazi, but they say the word sugar Nazi. I'm not one of those, you know. And they have it. They don't have a problem with it, but they don't have it in excess. But what I was going to say is, like, when my kids eat pizza, I can smell it. I can see that it looks good. I can smell that it smells good. But my brain doesn't remember. Oh, when I eat this, I feel so much better. It doesn't remember that. You know, that addicted part. So that part has atrophied. It's gone away. So the call to it is much. It just starts to go away. And the other part of my brain that just doesn't eat it, it's very strong.
So your job as a coach, it sounds like, is to help them and be there to help them make the right choices and rewire the brain. And the goal is to get to where they can sustain that healthy eating without you, without your nagging or whatever it is you do.
That's exactly right. The way one of my clients described it, she said, you know, at first I had to call you to hear your voice. Then I heard your voice in my head. And then it was my voice.
Mm-hmm.
So that I thought that best described it. Basically, it was integrated in terms of psychic terms or psychology terms. It's integrated in the person as a whole. And then they don't need me anymore. You know,
and they can self-sustain.
They still call and check in once in a while, but once you've got it, you're good.
Well, in alcoholism, there's a falling off the wagon. I presume that happens every now and then.
Yeah, I try not to let my girls go until they're pretty solid. But yes, if mm-hmm. it does happen, they know they can call me. I'm here for life.
Mm-hmm.
Once you're a skinny girl, or I call them my manly men, then it's for life. And if they ever need me, I'm here. I'm just a phone call away.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, let's talk about focus in the teens a little bit more, and more specifically parents. What can parents do? There's some obvious things like get educated, like that you said several times. But what can parents do to help their child that's having a weight problem?
Right. Well, I'm not very gentle about this. I think it's no one is truly responsible for teaching about eating habits and nutrition except for parents. While, you know, ultimately, you know, at the beginning I said, you know, the food industry, I absolutely 100% believe it's 100% of the parents' responsibility. Just as we teach them about drugs, smoking, underage drinking, unprotected sex, you know, we need to teach them that eating like will kill them, and it's not a joke, and it's not something light, and it's not something to reward them with. It's dangerous and deadly, being overweight. Losing just 10 pounds of weight decreases your chance of a heart attack by 50%, just 10 pounds. You know, losing 20 pounds of weight increases your lifespan by 10 years. 20
wow.
pounds increases your lifespan by 10 years. So, you know, this isn't just a little hamburger or a little cookie or a little piece of cake or whatever. It's serious. If your children are overweight, you know, it's very dangerous, and it will have lifelong consequences. So, yes, they have to get educated. They have to. No matter what the schools are doing, what the TV's doing, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, you can blame it on other people all you want. The buck stops with you. You're the parent. And it's rare that a child is in control of the food that's brought and available to them at home. So sure, teenagers, they go off and they can get things. Of course they can. But if they're eating perfectly at home, they're not going to get fat from what they eat out of the house. They're just not. There's just not enough opportunity.
Even if they're eating junk food at school?
Even if they're eating junk food at school, if you think about the amount of time they have to eat there versus the amount of time they have to eat at home, you know,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it's preferable, of course, but it's, you know, you've got much more time with your children. And by the time they're teenagers, you've developed patterns and habits, associations, desires, things people like. Of course, every child, every human being is drawn to sugar, and they're going to go through those phases where they're going to want it, of course. But if you grow up in a vegetarian household, when you go to college or whatever, you might try meat, but most people go back. If you grow up in a conservative household, most people go back. People tend to gravitate to how they were raised, and eating habits are no different.
Okay, well, we're talking about the parents and what parents need to do. Well, oftentimes parents will try a diet. They'll hear this diet or that diet, and I think that's in the education. But could you explain a little bit why most diets fail?
I think most diets fail for two reasons. One, they fail in the real sense because they're not healthy. So it's a low-carbohydrate diet, it's not healthy. A low-fat diet's not healthy. Eating only one food, which is kind of a, you know, one of those diets, that's not healthy. Counting points, like in Weight Watchers, it's not particularly healthy because they allow things like donuts to be part of your points. You know, so there's one of the reasons, a huge percent of the diets that I've seen on the market today aren't a good option is because they're bad food plans. The food is not solid. The second reason is what we've already talked about. Even if, you know, being educated, like we were saying, is one thing. Making it happen is another.
Mm-hmm.
But it's much easier to make it happen with your children than it is even yourself. I mean, if you're buying the food, it's what you give them. They can only have what you give them when they're in the home. So I just don't understand. You just can't be buying Twinkies and chips. I don't care how much they want them. You just don't get them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the more they eat them, the more they're going to want them. You develop a taste for the foods you eat. You just don't get them.
What about some of the, go over some of the other diets. Cause I've heard a new one for me is the, I think it's called the paleo diet, eating like the caveman did or something like that. What's the strengths, weaknesses of the various, or your critique of some of the various popular diets? You've talked about Weight Watchers.
Right. Paleo is actually a pretty, it can be difficult to follow, and they're very exercise heavy, but just the basics of the food, it's actually fairly good because they talk about refined carbs versus all carbs, you know, and they talk about eating grass-fed beef, Coconut, they were the first to really talk about the benefits of coconut butter, coconut oil, which just is fabulous. And it's really, it can be really hard to find, but it's so good for you. So I actually am a pretty big proponent of paleo. Now, they don't have any of the coaching, they don't have any of the mind changing, but the actual food plan, I think, is a pretty solid one.
Mm-hmm. And so you would say something like Curves overemphasizes exercise and it needs to be supplemented by a very specific dietary?
Well, yes. I mean, I hate to ever say overemphasizes exercise. Anything mm-hmm. that's saying you're going to exercise to lose weight is lying because it's not going to happen.
Well, I was thinking of the terms of where you just exercise and eat everything else, you know, feed your addiction to anything else, but you only exercise. Somebody could get into that.
Yeah, except they'll stay heavy unless they're mm-hmm. 20. You see teenagers. My son's a swimmer, and some of these kids, you remember when you were in your teens, a young boy from Idaho, you must have eaten like crazy, probably healthier food, but the metabolism is completely different.
I lived on a sort of a semi farm, but a lot of exercise, went running around the hills. I was skinny. I was actually scrawny. I think my problem occurred when I got to be a teacher in my early 20s and a little bit more sedentary lifestyle. And that's when I started gaining a bit of a gut.
Sometimes you can't tell. They call it skinny fat. Now I'm not so sure how much I agree with all that, but that the idea that some people just have great metabolism, so they keep the weight off, but they're still super unhealthy in their veins, their arteries, and things like that. I haven't seen any evidence or data on that to be the case. It's usually the fat that's causing you to be sick. It's literally the fat around the gut, the visceral fat that, it's around your heart, it's around your kidneys, your liver, it gets into your organs. So usually you can see it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But I can see some people, it wouldn't be so obvious on that. What are some other things? Well, the parents got to be very careful on the diets. Your recommendation, would it be called a diet, or is that a misnomer?
I call it a diet all the time, and people hate that. A lot of people say, I don't want to call it a diet, I want to call it a lifestyle. Well, a diet is what you eat.
Mm-hmm.
You can have a fast food diet, you can have the skinny coach diet, you can have the paleo diet. You can have a vegetarian diet. A diet's what you eat. I have no mm-hmm. problem with the word diet and all those things like the first three letters is a diet, blah, 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 blah. Just eat better. Eat mm-hmm. lots of fruits and vegetables, have good protein at every meal, and don't eat refined carbs. I mean, if you want the simple tricks and things like that, that everyone just absolutely, you should never, ever, ever, ever allow your children to drink soda, for God's sakes. I mean, that's like complete poison, not to mention how much sugar, but it's just the way that the sugar is made. It's very, very bad for you.
I don't even like it anymore. I used to drink it, and I just don't like it. Somebody gives me a Coke, and I say, no, I don't feel like it. So,
not a smile, huh?
not a smile, and I think it's because I was a little bit more in tune with that. You were starting to explain a little bit. Talk a little bit more about the type of diet you would recommend. What would a parent, if say they're fixing the meals for a week, how would you go about that? What would be key?
Okay, so for breakfast, always have the kid eat some good protein. So what I recommend for breakfast, a couple eggs, some plain yogurt with some fruit, cottage cheese with fruit and eggs. Eggs are perfectly fine. There's no association with doing cholesterol and eating eggs. That's mm-hmm. a myth. They found that to not be true. The research has proven that's not true. In fact, there's a high association between sugar intake and clogged arteries. Because what happens is when you eat sugar, it makes what they call sticky blood. And so when you eat cholesterol, like from a steak or from eggs, but usually you use that cholesterol. It goes through your arteries. It goes through, and then your body uses it for your skin, for your hair, for your brain. It gives you energy. But when you have sticky blood from sugar, the cholesterol sticks to the arteries. So it's the sugar. So anyway, eggs. Eggs are a great breakfast for everybody, especially kids.
How about lunch? How about lunch?
Lunch. Well, of course. Okay. So
might
you
be a
can
good
have
lunch.
a good lunch. If you're packing it, you know, you can give them whole grain crackers with a deli meat that doesn't have sugar in it, tuna, chicken breast, anything like that, some kind of meat. I don't advocate flour, so I don't advocate sandwiches, but my kids eat sandwiches as long as it's some kind of whole grain. You don't want to have any, you don't want wheat or corn in it because those are still processed. So have like a brown rice, you know, bread, something like that. And that's sometimes hard to find. It's easy to find where I'm at, and I know that. So when you can't find anything like that, then I say do it in another form. You can have, I make burgers all the time or when we go out to eat, but we wrap it in the lettuce. It's called protein style. So just trying to move away from the flours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
okay.
the similar thing for dinner, you know, you'd have steak, potatoes, broccoli, you could have chicken, you know, yams and, you know, sweet peas or snow peas. It just, you want a whole grain, a protein, and a vegetable.
Okay. Now, how about snacks? And some people, I've heard some people say it's better to eat, say, 5 small meals than 3 larger meals. What do you think on that?
Right. Well, for weight loss, it's not better. What happens with your body, I know a lot of people say that, but the more that they're studying the things, the more precise the information is, and the more we're finding out. What they found out is, well, we already knew that when you eat, your body uses that food for energy. We already know that.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're not eating, let's say you don't eat every 2 hours, then you don't have any food in your gut, in your system for energy. So what do you think your body uses for energy when there's no food readily available?
What?
It uses fat. It uses your stored fat.
Okay.
So if you're feeding your body every 2 hours, then you're always giving it food for energy, and it never has a chance to go and get those fat stores. So if you're trying to lose weight, I recommend the way we eat is we have this both in one snack. Now, for kids, that's a completely different story. If they're not overweight, you know, they do need to have an ongoing source of, you know, energy. Because
they have ungodly amount of energy.
That's right, and they use it. Even when they're in front of a screen, they're burning more calories than we are. They burn more calories sitting in front of a screen than we do when we're walking. That's just how their bodies work.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Okay. Well, Tiffany, we're just about out of time. This has been fascinating. I've learned an awful lot, and I think it's clarified a few things that I'd heard pro and cons on. You can get the next couple, 3 minutes. You want to talk about your business, how to contact you, you know, initiatives. I guess you could call it a commercial presentation if you like.
Okay. Well, I don't think it'll take that long. It's fairly simple. You just go to Skinny Coach, SKINNYCOACH, skinnycoach.com, and everything's on there. I also have YouTube videos. I have Skinny Coach channel, so you can see videos on different things I might talk about. But at Skinny Coach, you can sign up for the newsletter. So even if you're not interested in working with me or a diet plan of any kind, I send out informative newsletter just with different things like we talked about today. Tips, tricks, new research, and maybe 2 a month or so. So that's always nice to get. And you can get that there too. You can take the sugar addiction quiz there. You can get my email there if you want the name for 100 sugars. Or if you just have a question, you're welcome to email me through that. It's Tiffany at Skinny Coach, but you can always find it on the site. So everything's at Skinny Coach.
Okay, well, I guess we've just got the real skinny from the Skinny Coach about foods and diets and all that. This is Lon Woodbury, and this is Parent Choices for Struggling Teens. I'm located in North Idaho, and we've just been interviewing Tiffany Wright, the L.A. Skinny Coach, with the topic has been sugar and teens and talking about the obesity and all that. Be sure to come back next week. We'll be talking about schools for underachieving boys. We're having the Tim Vines, the headmaster of Grand River Academy.
You're listening to Parent Choices for Struggling Teens with Lon Woodbury, only on LA Talk Radio.